a look at a painful disease that challenges pain management for all health professionals, and some news on pediatric dental needs for you. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show, our podcast for nurses by nurses. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome all of you to the show and thank you for checking it out. We've got a great show for you in this episode. First up in this week's show, we've got a look at a disease called reflex sympathetic dystrophy syndrome, or RSDS. I chat with two people from the RSDS Association about this disorder, including a nurse who's been living with the disease for quite some time. We'll also have a segment on pediatric dentistry and what it could mean for nurses who interact with pediatric patients or their parents. We'll have that and more later on in this episode coming up. Before we get to that, though, I do want to make sure you follow up on all the information for this and every episode, and you can do that by heading over to nursingshow.com. Check out the links in each episode's show notes. There are also other articles and links to things out there, like our free Nursing Show mobile app, student nurse tips, and a lot more. But make sure you're following up on what I talk about in the show so you understand how it's applied to your own nursing scope of practice. If you want to get back in touch with me, I hope you'll drop me an email. You can always send those emails in to me here at nursingshow@gmail.com. I love to hear from you, and I make sure I respond back to all those emails that come in. So make sure you send me links to news items you'd like me to cover, interview suggestions with you or somebody you know. Whatever the case may be, I will get back in touch with you, so please keep those emails coming. Also, a special thank you to our sponsor, Physiocontrol. They are sponsoring my upcoming trip to NTI in Houston for the Critical Care Nurses Conference. You can find out more about Physio at physio-control.com. And check out all the links to any of my sponsors over at Nursing Show in the show notes at nursingshow.com. That's it. I'll have some more contact information coming up later on in this episode, but let's go ahead and get on into this week's show. It's coming right up. Coming up right now is a segment with someone from the American Association of Pediatric Dentistry to share a variety of important ways parents can both recognize potential problems for their children's oral health and outline the actions they can take to prevent some of those issues. Check it out.
Hi, Dr. Miller. It's great to have you here. This is The Nursing Show. It's a program for nurses all over the country, and also some student nurses listen to the show as well. And so I'd like to check in with you first and just kind of find out a little bit about your background. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Well, Jamie, thanks for having me. And I think this is, we're delighted to have an opportunity to speak with other healthcare colleagues, and our nursing cohorts are certainly some people that are critical to get our message across, because in many cases you're seeing these young patients as newborns, as infants, and I think that's where it all starts. A little bit about myself. I'm currently the president of American Academy of Pediatric Dentistry, and we're really here as a professional organization that represents pediatric dentists, and our goal is optimal oral health for all children. And so I'm delighted to be here. Thank you, Jamie.
So, you know, nurses, especially in schools and places like that, are often the only healthcare professionals that some children see. So what are some of the things that they can be looking for that can help children manage things like cavities?
You bet. And, you know, I think one thing that's important is to emphasize the importance of not only their medical and seeing their pediatric providers, but also to see their medical providers, but also seeing their pediatric dental providers as well. And what we recommend is at the AAPD, as well as the American Academy of Pediatrics, and all pediatric health organizations recommend age one dental visit. And so we really want to get a child in for dental visit by the age of one. That's where all the prevention starts, as your nursing team members know. Prevention is the key, and that's where it starts, and that's where we become the best educator for the parents treating their child.
I understand there's some new innovations with treating cavities and managing the, children with some beginning stages of tooth decay. So can you tell us a little bit about what's going on out there in the forefront of treatment?
Absolutely. Well, new in the U.S., it's been available for many years outside the U.S., but new in the U.S. is an antibacterial liquid that's called silverdiamine fluoride. And essentially, what's important to know, it has limited uses, so it's not a panacea. And its primary benefits are in very young children that maybe not at that age where they're able to cooperate or tolerate dental treatment. It gives us an option to perhaps apply this liquid to stop the progress of the cavity and allow us to buy time to then allow that child to get older and treat that cavity at a later time. So again, it's not definitive care by itself. The other thing that's important to know is one of the negative cosmetic effects with it is on the affected area of the tooth, when you apply it, it turns that area of the tooth black. So there will be a cosmetic effect that can be resolved and corrected once that tooth is treated in a more permanent fashion.
So when the nurses are talking to parents of children that are perhaps at risk for tooth decay and other dental issues, what are some of the things that we can do to help them fill in some of the gaps of their knowledge? I'm sure there are things that we aren't learning. Our focus is primarily medical focus, not dentistry. But again, we believe in a holistic approach, and we believe that good oral care is as important as any other part of the body system.
You absolutely. And I think where our nursing colleagues can come in so valuably is in really having parents understand there is a link with oral health and our general health. We know there's a link with oral health and increased diabetes problems. Increase oral health and an increase for premature labor and premature birth, and also the link with oral health and cardiac disease. So I think we are understanding and we're learning more and more every day about that link with the oral health and infection and disease process, like any other part of the body, how that affects the rest of the body. So that's the one area our nursing colleagues could continue to keep that message alive. I think the other one is starting early, prevention. Age one dental visit, that's really what we find as critical, is beginning that child at age one to see a pediatric dentist.
Now, what are some of the primary causes we see out there for tooth decay in children? I've heard things like juices and other sugared drinks are causing people to be more at risk, but are there specific things that we see in children?
Yes, there are, Jamie, and I think one area, particularly in that very young child, is being aware of the contributing factors that the nursing bottle can have with cavities. And here's the scenario. It's one of those situations where a child is put to bed at nap time with a nursing bottle that has milk formula or juice on that in the bottle. And so for hours throughout the night, that child will be nursing and getting that liquid that has sugar in it or acids in that. And for hours, those bacteria in that warm environment can really become problematic. So again, we want to encourage, obviously, parents to bottle feed their children before bedtime. Try to feed them enough volume that they're going to sleep for longer periods of time. But really try to avoid laying them down at bedtime with a nursing bottle with anything other than water in it.
So I'm sure there's some great resources. One of the things we try to do with our nursing audience is have them have a ready group of resources that we can point parents to, whether online or other sources. Is there a place, I'm sure, that we can also direct them to find more information about good oral health care for children?
Absolutely. And that website is AAPD's website called mychildrensteeth.org. That is really the go-to a website and information source for parents. And I'm sure your nursing viewers could learn some things that they could then pass along if they would, view that website themselves. But not only pass that information along to their families and the children that they care for, but also it's an interactive site that kids can be engaged and learn fun new things about their oral health in a fun way. That's interactive.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Miller, I want to thank you very much for your time this morning with our audience, and we will continue to be good advocates for oral health in all of our patients.
Thank you, Jamie, so much for having me, and thanks for the opportunity to speak with our nursing colleagues.
Reflex sympathetic dystrophy, also known as complex regional pain syndrome, or CRPS, is a chronic neuropathic pain condition that can arise from trauma of any kind. It can be something as simple as a minor blood draw that initiates the reaction. The condition arises more frequently than many emergency physicians and other healthcare professionals realize. For instance, roughly 3% of patients suffering a Coles fracture develop CRPS. Often the traumatic event cannot be remembered, so minor in scope, and the CRPS has been associated with trauma happening anywhere from a day to a year after the event happens. So its most consistent feature is how often our healthcare professionals, like nurses, fail to recognize what they're dealing with and deal with the patient in a way that doesn't respect the fact that they have this complex disorder going on. So check out this interview, and hopefully it'll teach you more about this rare illness and how to recognize it in your patients. Jim and Beth, it's great to have you here on the Nursing Show. I want to welcome you. I'm really excited to learn a little bit more about reflex sympathetic dystrophy syndrome. And you're going to be telling me all about that. It's something I'm not familiar with at all. Before we get to that, though, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourselves? Jim, why don't you go first? Tell us a little bit about who you are and why you're here.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jamie. I'm a master level social worker. I've always worked for not-for-profits all my career. And I was lucky enough 17 years ago to be hired to be the executive director. I'm now the executive vice president director of the Reflex Sympathetic Dystrophy Syndrome Association, and we're an international not-for-profit that is whose mission is to provide support, education, and most importantly, hope to everyone who suffers with CRPS or RSD as we drive research for better treatment and a cure.
Beth, how about you?
I am a registered nurse. I have not been practicing for the last 10 years because I did develop this condition, which has disabled me. But I do a lot of volunteer initiatives with RSDSA, such as speaking with other organizations and creating different types of education for people.
Excellent. So why don't we start off with helping people understand what RSD or reflex sympathetic dystrophy is? Would you like to maybe take that, Jim, and tell us a little bit what this disorder is? I mean, it's not something I'm familiar with. I never saw it in the emergency room or my time as a paramedic in the back of the ambulance. I don't remember ever having a patient come across with this diagnosis. It doesn't mean I haven't necessarily seen that patient, as I've educated myself a little bit, because this is doesn't get caught that often.
You're absolutely correct. It is rather a rare syndrome, but it can be incredibly debilitating. And reflex sympathetic dystrophy, it's now known by a name that changed in the 90s, a complex regional pain syndrome. And it's a neuroinflammatory syndrome that is characterized by some telltale symptoms, at least in when it's a acute onset, and we're talking about incredible pain that's out of proportion to the inciting trauma. Generally, it's a fracture or sprain. It can be a crush injury. More and more now we're seeing as a result of surgery, and there is generally, at least in the beginning, there's color changes, there's sweating, there is basically one limb may be warmer or colder than the other limb. The cardinal symptom in the acute phase is hypersensitivity to touch or allodynia, and that a lot of times people will chase this diagnosis from healthcare professional to healthcare professional, and the best prognosis is when it's caught early.
Is there a specialist that deals with this particular type of disorder, or do you, how is this something that a primary care physician or a nurse practitioner would refer somebody to a specific professional for?
Well, basically, most people go to an orthopedic surgeon, at least in the beginning, and he or she would then refer probably to physical and occupational therapy. And a lot of times, if the therapist is not familiar with CRPS or RSD, then they could be given the wrong therapy. So eventually, once the diagnosis is made, you need to go to see a specialist who really has a special interest in treating CRPS. And it's not treated by one specialist. It's treated by a whole interdisciplinary care team, where that might be a neurologist, an anesthesiologist, a PT or an occupational therapist. A lot of times psychological counseling is needed, because it can rip apart your whole life, as Beth will be talking about. And sometimes vocational rehab, and sometimes if you're injured at work, you need a lawyer, because it can be a very adversarial situation.
Beth, coming to you as a patient with CRPS, can you describe for us, what it was like, how the onset occurred with you, and what it's like living with this disorder?
Sure. I'd just like to add to what Jim said, too, that this affects not just adults, but it also affects children. So many people that we speak to are parents of living it with the children. But for me, I had fallen at work and tore my ACL. And during surgery, something must have occurred, or my body responded in a certain way that I just remember waking up screaming in the recovery room, not even being able to articulate what was going on. I could not feel because I had a stem block from the ACL, so it wasn't surgical pain. It was all in the back of my leg, just screaming. That proceeded to a five-day hospitalization, which was just supposed to be a day-op thing. Went through lots of testing, ruling out other conditions, which is important to make sure that you're not, avoiding or not seeing something. Looking for blood clots, all those things. Nothing was showing up. Kept saying that I'm feeling, and again, because I could articulate, I think that expedited some of my my management. It was all neuropathic. I could feel these electrical currents going up and down my legs. I remember taking, a shower, and it would almost feel like shards of glass were cutting my leg, and I turned to the opposite side, and I felt normal, fine. And then I'd go to the other side, and I'd be like, this is so painful. I don't understand what's happening. I'd go out to go to physical therapy, and the wind, it's wind, would be brushing against my leg, and it was almost like I had a major open wound, and you were squeezing lemon juice and rubbing it with a Brillo pad. I can't even explain how painful it is. It wasn't post-op pain. This is not post-op pain. This is incredibly painful. Some people describe it as lava or, acid being thrown on your leg. It's so ungodly painful. And, at the beginning, like Jim said before, there was nothing you could visually see. So it was very subjective. So when you go to a practitioner, they're looking and you don't really see anything other than I can't wear clothes on it. I can't wear shoes and socks. Don't touch it because I'll kill you. It's so painful. But there was nothing that modeled at that particular time. So that made it more complicated. Over time and going through the ruling out process, I did start to turn cyanotic in certain areas, and you could, it just progressed from there. So what I used to look like then is a little different now because it did progress, but that's how it started.
And we've said, I guess Jim said that it just takes a lot of, sometimes people go from healthcare professional to healthcare professional to try to get this before this gets diagnosed. Do you feel that your experience as a healthcare professional helped you to get the process moving a little more quickly, or did you see the same problem?
That's an excellent question. Excellent question. I did get passed from practitioner to practitioner. I think because I was a colleague, I was looked at as a reputable patient. However, I will say I still saw practitioners who couldn't, there wasn't a scan, there wasn't a blood test, there was nothing objective in the assessment to say, I know what this is, that looked at me like I was a little, one of those patients. But we all know what that means. We're one of those patients, which is frustrating. And I'm a health professional. So for the average person who's not, that's even a more complicated issue.
So it's hard to diagnose. What about the treatment? We touched on a little bit about therapy, physical therapy, and that seems to help. Are you able to get the pain to go away, or is it with therapy and treatment, or is this something that you're living with chronic pain all the time?
Excellent question.
Go ahead, Beth, please.
For me, because it's been 10 years, it evolves. And so the goal of first, the goal is to find someone who believes you, and then to find someone who really understands the condition to try to help treat you. PT is very important. Not being mobile is almost counterproductive, although that antage that we learned as practitioners, no pain, no gain, is not effective with this, because you can't, it's to go to the pain, not beyond the pain. For me, over the course of time, different types of medications provide different type of relief. The goal is not, listen, I'd love to have 100% relief. That would be excellent. And if I ever find that magic wand, I'll gladly pass that around. But being more functional is really my goal. And in order to do that, I take different medications from different categories to give me some relief. That's a brief little synopsis.
Jim, I know that your organization is doing something to help educate healthcare professionals and nurses included in that. Tell us a little bit about this initiative you have going on right now.
Thanks, Jamie. We have worked with the Academy of Integrative Pain Management, and we have two courses, and they're both accredited for docs, for nurses, and psychologists. And one is an overview, comprehensive overview of complex regional pain syndrome, how it's diagnosed, how it's treated, how it's managed. And there is another course in conjunction with that you could also take, and they both are free, that really goes into some more complex case histories, because we're talking about the telltale symptoms a lot, but a lot of times if people have a long-standing case of CRPS, it can really become very complex, and other comorbid conditions become involved. And those courses are available on our website, which is rsds.org. And that if they contact us via our 800 number, we could definitely get them right to that. And that's 877-662-7737.
Well, I'll definitely have the link that I received in my packet here. I'll put that in the show notes. So on the website at nursingshow.com, we'll have a link there for this episode that'll take people right to that series of educational materials. One final, or maybe one of the final things I want to ask about, Beth, you know, as nurses, we are often called upon to be advocates for our patient. If you're a nurse and you have a patient with non-specific pain or specific pain, but that they can't tie to any kind of injury or specific source through objective assessment, what is your recommendation for those nurses out there to be advocates for their patients and not just say, oh, this is one of those patients? I mean, we just talked about it, but how do we reach around that? How do we get past that?
Honestly, education, something just like this kind of venue is very important. What I suggest for patients, because I think it's nurses learning and taking in the course like the one that RSDSA has. I'm working on an initiative with RSDSA for a nursing pain webinar to try to bring more light to it, because we really didn't learn much about chronic pain in nursing school. There's a great information on RSD, such as is a card that I actually carry, and I suggest that other people carry too, that talks about what CRPS is. There's an emergency protocol for patients with this condition, as well as a hospital protocol. I think downloading some of that information and having it there is part of the medical community starting to say, you know what, if I have a patient with this odd neuropathic condition and maybe their nails on the affected side are starting to split or get super hard, they have these odd sweating things, you're losing hair on your leg, or odd things start to happen, you really have to pause and say, wait a minute, this is starting to sound like neuropathic, and maybe I need to present that to another practitioner and say, could it be possible? Maybe we need to look at that.
Excellent point. So I will have links to this. RSDS.org is the website to go to. Jim, I understand you guys are pretty active on social media. So where can folks find you on social media sources like Facebook or Twitter?
We definitely are on Facebook with RSDSA, and we also tweet, and we're at RSDSA, and we're also on Instagram and Pinterest. So we're there, and if people will like our page, we definitely can interact with them and show them. There's a lot of good support, especially on Facebook, and there's a number of individuals who are great advocates on Twitter.
Excellent. Well, Jim and Beth, I want to thank you both for taking some time to share with our nursing audience, and we'll get the word out there and spread this to our colleagues. It's always good to have some education on different topics, and this is certainly something that I don't think I learned anything about, and I'd be surprised if many people in my audience know about it either. So we're going to get the word out to them. Thank you very much for taking some time.
I have one final parting word that I think is important from a nurse to a nurse. For example, if you have a patient with CRPS, it is not recommended to put ice on the affected extremity. It's counterproductive. Now, as a nurse, when someone comes in swollen, right, our thing is to put the ice on. Mm-hmm. And yet, if you have CRPS in that limb, it's counterproductive. So that's a little tidbit for people to think about if someone does come in and identify themselves as a CRPS patient, to try to avoid the ice on that extremity.
That's going to close out this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank all of you for checking out the program this week. Make sure you follow up, though, on all of the information you picked up in this episode. Head over to nursingshow.com and check out the episode show notes. There's a link right there at the top of the page. In there are listings for all of the episodes of The Nursing Show. From the most recent one at the top, you can scroll down and go all the way back to the very first episode. But I want you to get the full information there with links to other resources so that you understand how to apply what you hear on the show to your own nursing practice or studies. If you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email. You can send that in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I respond back to every email that comes in, and I want to hear from you. So send me your comments, your questions, suggestions, news links. Help support the Nursing Show community with your input. You can also get the Nursing Show email newsletter. There's a link and form right on the right-hand side of the Nursing Show site, so fill out that short form, and we'll send you the links to each episode's show notes directly to your email inbox each week. You can also connect with me on social media sites. I'm available there under the handle PodMedic, so you can find me there under twitter.com/PodMedic and facebook.com/PodMedic, so friend or follow me. You can also become a member of the community over on Facebook by liking the Nursing Show Facebook page at facebook.com/nursingshow. Click the like button there and join the conversation on that page. I post other nursing and healthcare articles and pictures on the Nursing Show site throughout the course of each week and over at the Nursing Show page, so check it all out. That's it for me. I'm your host, Jamie Davis. I'll be back with more episodes here of The Nursing Show. Remember, it comes out every Friday for you, so you can wrap up your nursing week. In the meantime, please remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show.